Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are La Chimera, Stop Motion, and Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor.
Well, the three films I would like to talk about today are very different from each other, and I would like to start off with an Italian film called La Chimera. This is directed by the Italian filmmaker Alice Rohrwacher, and a gifted filmmaker, that is for sure. And it's an unusual movie, and it's a movie which really, for a while, it sort of frustrated me because it moves kind of slowly, and there's a lot of diversion and digression and meandering. But after a while, it really won me off. And I have to say, it's won over a lot of critics. It's been getting extremely good reviews in the short time it's been out. So La Chimera takes place in Italy. And the main character is a guy named Arthur, who is actually British, but he's based now in Italy, where it turns out, by the way, we're back in the 1980s here. It turns out that he had a woman who he desperately loved, but who was no longer in his life. And he spends a certain amount of time in the sort of crumbling but still somewhat grand villa of the young woman's mother, played by Isabella Rossellini, by the way, who, much to her credit, is really showing her age and just being perfectly happy to play a somewhat infirm older woman, and gives quite a nice performance, although she's not in a whole lot of the movie. So that's where Arthur spends some of his time. But he spends the rest of his time with a group of people who are known as Tomboroli. And that's the T-O-M-B at the beginning, is as in tomb, because what they do is they rob graves. And they're not robbing graves for bodies. They are out in the Italian countryside, and they are looking for artifacts from the Etruscan era, when people were often buried with valuable objects, objects which were meant to see them into the afterlife or be of use to them in the afterlife. And so if you can get a hold of some of these things, then you can find a fence who's going to buy these, because it's illegal for private citizens to get these and then sell them. If you can manage all that, you can make a lot of money, it turns out. So that is what Arthur is doing. He is out there with these other Tomboroli, and they are looking around for these things. And it turns out he has a gift for finding these things. He uses sort of like a dowsing rod, a divining rod, and he can somehow sense that there is one of these graves underneath his feet. And then they begin digging, and sure enough, sometimes they find something. It's kind of ironic, because one of the earlier finds that they make, oh my gosh, they got all this stuff. Here's this dugout grave under the ground. It's like a chamber. It's not like a grave. And it has these objects in it, and they take the objects to their fence, who says, a poor person was buried here, and these things are pretty much junk. So they're not worth much of anything, just a little tiny bit. So it's not always a way to strike it rich. But they keep on trying, and they keep on going. And yes, a while into the movie, they really uncover sort of pay dirt. They come upon a wonderful, beautiful, fully intact statue, a chimera statue, other things in that same grave or chamber. But there it is, and it's absolutely sensational. The only trouble is it's too big for them to remove it, especially since the authorities are at this very moment hot on their trail. Well, they do manage to get away with the head of the statue. And the rest of the movie kind of unfolds from there. They have this head, and they wish they had the rest of it, and all kinds of misadventures occur. All the while, Arthur is still hanging out from time to time with the mother of his lost love, and dreaming of his lost love, and wishing that she weren't lost, and these things happen. And then, of course, there's all kinds of sort of antics with the other Tomboroli, who are sort of a scruffy gang of people. They're entertaining to watch, but they're not exactly dignified, shall we say. So all this stuff is going on, and Alice Rohrwacher, the director and writer, she uses a whole lot of different film formats. Some of it is shot on 35 millimeters, some of it on 16 millimeters, some of it on the old home movie format, Super 16. And sometimes the colors are very realistic and sometimes they're very stylized. And it's a really interesting and beautiful and stimulating movie to watch. The trouble, as I said earlier, with La Chimera, from my point of view, is that the story, and it is very much a narrative film, really has all these digressions, and in between the different things that happen, there's just a whole lot of time where nothing much happens. And you can look at this as refreshing, and in some ways it is. You can also look at it as sort of frustrating, and you sort of wish this movie would get on with things a bit more. I kind of like movies sometimes that meander and that sort of wander about as they're telling their story. I thought this movie pushed that a bit far at times. However, as I said earlier, also, as the movie goes along, I just really, it sort of captivated me. It just sort of, it won me over. And I started really enjoying watching it. I enjoyed certainly watching the lead performance, which is by Josh O'Connor. And here he is in Italy, speaking mostly Italian. I remember him primarily from The Crown, where he did a wonderful job of playing Prince Charles. And here he is looking very different and acting very differently in all kinds of ways. Yeah, it was fun to watch that. So again, La Chimera, I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's a very ingratiating movie. And again, after a while, it won me over. And I think that it will win over most viewers. Well worth checking out. Next movie I'd like to talk about, again, it is very different. It is called Stop Motion, and that is one word. And of course, stop motion is a kind of animation technique where you take a two-dimensional or more often three-dimensional object, a puppet of some sort, a doll of some sort, a figurine of some, whatever it may be, and you film it in tiny little increments, moving a little bit, shooting one frame, moving a little bit more, shooting one frame, and eventually when you play it all back, you have what looks like a moving figurine. And you've made an animation. So that's what this movie is about. It was directed and co-written by Robert Morgan, and it stars Aisling Franciosi as the main character, who is a young woman who is making a stop-motion animation with her mother. And her mother regards this as very, very much her film. It's obviously her project, to be fair, but she wants everything done exactly the way she wants it. Her own hands are largely crippled by arthritis, so she has to depend on her grown daughter to do most of the actual animation work. And the mother is a real tyrant. She's very demanding. She's very unpleasant in all kinds of ways. And the daughter is just having to deal with this day by day as she does the actual work on this animation, all following her mother's directions. Well, then the mother is debilitated by a crippling stroke, and she ends up in a coma in a hospital. So now our main character, her name is Ella, has to carry on this work by herself. And pretty soon she goes off and she starts making her own animation instead. She starts doing her own stop motion, her own story. Well, fairly early in the story, in the film, she meets a girl, a little girl, played by Stella Gonet, who is quite a wonderful performance, who is somehow strange and probably sort of sinister. What is going on here? Okay. And this little girl starts telling Ella, our main character, a story. Here's what your animation should be about. And Ella at first resists this because she's making her own animation, but she's having trouble coming up with her own story. So she starts to take this little girl's story. The little girl's name is Suzanne. And the thing is that Suzanne is only telling this new story a little bit at a time. And she's also making her own demands now. They're suggestions, but the little girl always says, if you don't take my suggestion, I won't tell you any more of the story. So Ella feels sort of roped into this. So Ella has started out making her figurine, her main character, out of the usual sort of material that you would make, a sort of a clay that she would make that sort of character out of. But now the little girl suggests that she make it out of meat, because it's sort of a dark story that's being told and it's going to have some danger in it. So make it out of meat. And then it eventually becomes the idea of making it out of a dead animal. And things get more sinister as the movie proceeds. So this is the basic setup for the film. And then we see how all these things unfold. The movie is billed to some extent as an animation. It's not. It's not an animated film. It is a live action film with bits of animation here and there in it, which makes sense because it is, after all, about the making of of stop motion animation. As it goes along, it gets stranger and stranger and more sort of exotic, shall we say. And it is a horror movie. So it is not a particularly bloody or grisly or violent horror movie, but it does have moments of pretty horrific stuff in it. So you have to be ready for that when you look at this movie. But again, as today's horror movies go, it's actually reasonably mild. It's very well made. After a while, and this almost always happens with horror movies, near the end it devolves, in my opinion, into stuff that's not so interesting. That's when you get the most action, the most violence, the most sort of jumping around and people in horrible situations and stuff like that. And honestly, it becomes less interesting. Less interesting as a story, less interesting as a movie, for me at least. For other people, this will be the great payoff, what they've been waiting for throughout the whole film. But most of the movie moves at a fairly gradual pace. It develops the story one step at a time. There's very little wasted time in this movie, but it just takes its time getting from point to point. It doesn't meander like La Chimera, the earlier movie I talked about, does. It really is always telling its story, but it's taking its time and it's moving at its own pace, and I found it quite engrossing most of the way through. So stop motion, if you like horror movies, if you like fantasies, if you don't mind a little darkness, it's a good movie. Very well done. A slightly unusual premise and a very unusual story that I enjoyed following. And finally today, I will get to a documentary. And this has the most exotic title of today's films, Carol Doda Topless at the Condor. Oh, that sounds like an exploitation movie, doesn't it? Well, it's not really an exploitation movie. It's a documentary about things that really happened. But of course, the things it's about were pretty exploitative, yes. It is a documentary that centers primarily on the career of Carol Doda. And back in the middle 1960s, in 1964, she was in San Francisco, and she was a dancer at a club. She really needed work, and that's what she wanted to do. And I won't tell all how this happened, but the idea came of making a breakthrough of, instead of dancing in a skimpy costume, why not take off the whole top of her costume and become what soon became called a topless dancer? Okay, so that's what she was going to do. That's what she decided to do. This was partly inspired, and oh my gosh, if you're my age, you might remember this, by the exploits of Rudi Gernreich, the fashion designer, a very important fashion designer, who designed the monokini or the one-piece bathing suit, which was a bathing suit that a woman would wear that would leave her breasts exposed. So that was partly what inspired Carol Doda and the club where she was doing this. In any case, she became the first topless dancer way back in the middle 1960s. And no surprise, she became a real sensation. And before you know it, other people were imitating her act, and they were also becoming topless dancers. So it became a thing. Of course, the authorities, the police, the morality people tried to close it all down, but they lost in court, and so this stuff was able to proceed. So Carol Doda was now only one of many topless dancers. So what did she do? She did something that unfortunately seems fairly logical. Her breasts were not very large, so she decided to make them larger. So all of this, remember, is decades ago. So she starts having silicone injections. And this is something I'd never really thought deeply about, but this was before the age of silicone implants. They were just silicone injections that were done directly into the breasts. And according to the movie, Carol Doda ultimately had something like 44 of these because she kept thinking she had to make her breasts larger and larger. Well, think about this. You're having silicone injected directly into your breasts over and over again, and yes, it's making them larger, but what else is it doing to your body? Well, she seems to have avoided the most horrific consequences of this. But my gosh, this is the kind of thing that the movie gets into, which is very interesting in its own sort of grim way. So, okay, the movie proceeds, and of course, topless dancing becomes a big, huge thing. It sweeps the country and all that sort of stuff. Carol Doda, with her larger breasts, is still only one of many now. And of course, as the movie proceeds, other things transpire that we are all familiar with. The next next thing you know, there were also what were called, irrationally enough, bottomless dancers, where they were dancing completely nude. And of course, they had to wear, in some cases, teensy little things to cover up their genitals, which actually looked like genitals, that kind of thing. The movie gets into all of that. And ultimately, we have this going on and the cops coming down on this sort of thing. And then what you have in the later part of the movie is just the enormous degeneration of what already was a pretty degenerate form of entertainment into just a whole lot of sleaze, all kinds of unsavory people, not just club owners who may have been totally legitimate, just trying a new kind of entertainment to make money, but really unsavory people, criminals, bad types like this. Drugs entered the scene more and more. And after a while, the whole thing was just very, very foul as a scene and dangerous for so many people. Poor Carol Doda kept going and going. She tried different parts of the country. At one point, she tried to start a dramatic career by acting and singing in a play based on Somerset Maugham's famous Rain. But there was a newspaper strike going on, and so they couldn't get any press. And so she thinks that's what killed that enterprise. Judging from the tiny bit we see on the screen, it wasn't very good. And eventually, she lived to a ripe old age. She didn't die till she was in her late 70s, but she had a very checkered career with all kinds of very sometimes unsavory things swirling around her. Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor, is a very interesting documentary with a whole lot of really rich archival footage from various periods in American entertainment history. I found it ultimately kind of a depressing movie, but it was an interesting movie to watch. Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor, not something I'd want to look at a whole lot of times, but pretty educational in its own sleazy way. So that is my, I hope, not too sleazy story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films La Chimera, Stop Motion, and Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.